I am going to be speaking today with Brad Friedman of Brad Blog. I tell you, it's better than coffee in the morning. It'll get your blood boiling, and if it doesn't, make your head explode. We're speaking with him by phone. Are you there, Brad?
I am. Good morning, Michelle.
Okay, it's wonderful to have you. Before we get into the pimp reporting on James O'Keefe, let's get a little background about you and Brad Blog. You've been around for 6 years.
We have indeed, yeah, since early 2004.
And again, I know that you also were featured this year in Project Censored, which is the Bible for KABU listeners, as far as I'm concerned, about the stories that, again, will just make your head explode.
I am a proud Project Censored Award winner concerning my coverage of Mike Connell, the IT guru to George Bush and Karl Rove, who was involved in what appears to be a massive conspiracy in the 2004 Ohio presidential election. And as well, I was honored to contribute a chapter to their latest Censored 2010 book. I was able to contribute a chapter on the massive election problems that were seen across the country in the 2008 election cycle.
Yes, which unfortunately most of the listeners at KABU are not only familiar with. We went through it and have, you know, spilled blood and anger over it. But that's really how you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming it was your work with the voting issues that kind of drew you to Acorn.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because this was at the heart. It, for me, when I started reporting on the election concerns of 2004, right after that presidential election, that's really when I started digging into this business, because so few other media outlets were, certainly not the New York Times, who we'll get to in a bit, but, you know, has proven themselves this week to, well, speaking of head exploding,
yes.
Wait to hear that story. But they were not investigating this stuff at all. They said, oh, it was all the stuff of conspiracy theory and nonsense back in 2004. And then, of course, by the time we got to 2008, just 2 days prior to the 2008, the first primary election in the country in New Hampshire, they ran a Sunday Times Magazine cover story with someone in a voting booth exploding, and you know, the text warning, your vote may be lost, stolen, hacked, etc. This was just 2 days before the election, of course, when it was too late to do anything about it for the most part in 2008. But we had come a long way since 2004, since they had literally been calling guys like Brad Friedman at the Brad Blog conspiracy theorists. So it was nice to see them. Of course, they didn't apologize, but it was nice to see them coming around and recognizing at least some of the dangers that I've been trying to warn people about when it comes to electronic voting. However, 2 days later, we had the New Hampshire primary, which was a disaster on all sorts of levels, amongst them the fact that it was Obama was predicted to win, Hillary Clinton ended up winning, and yet the state of New Hampshire never bothered to actually count some 60% of the ballots that they just ran through Diebold optical scan machines, which we know can be hacked very easily and need to be checked against that possibility. That said, those were the those were and are the real concerns about elections, the fact that it really can take a conspiracy of one to flip an entire election electronically without notice. And yet, following 2004, while folks like myself were trying to investigate what the hell went on in Ohio, the Republicans started coming out with this voter fraud nonsense and these claims that there was massive voter fraud in Ohio. Not election fraud, mind you, but voter fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done by the Democrats. And it was these rascals at Acorn who were committing voter fraud, and on and on and on. And it became clear, at least to me, over time, that Acorn was being targeted for little more than the fact that they go out there and register hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of middle and low and middle income voters to legally vote, to legally exercise their franchise in this democracy. And as it turns out, for some reason or another, these low and middle income voters vote overwhelmingly Democratic, go figure.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans can have none of that. So they are and have been targeting these folks directly with any sort of propaganda, any sort of nonsense, any amount of lies that they can come up with to basically put these guys out of business, to discredit Acorn, to take away any federal funding that they might have, and so on and so forth.
And
they're doing a good job of it.
I was going to say, and start with, and I want our listeners to know, we'll be taking some calls after we give you an opportunity to do a little background about this. But starting with just the drumbeat of disparaging, questioning, utilizing Acorn as a code word for representative democracy run amok. Now we're starting to hear some drumbeat about a literacy test and whether there shouldn't be some, you know, qualifications to vote. I mean, it has been and is continues to be the drumbeat of the right. And they just vilify and continue on. Well, the cornerstone of your latest report, which I found absolutely fascinating, and as you walk us through the details, people will understand how this insidious villainization and subsequent to that, Acorn has been. Even Democrats running for cover and not being aware of the total and true story. And again, as you will lay out, you know, supported by the New York Times and a lack of any real thorough investigation, a Judith Millering of the evidence.
Yeah.
So talk to us about the New York Times and about the contested pimp reporting of James O'Keefe.
Sure. And before I do, I will just lay out this one point in case there are any listeners who are still unaware of this fact. But there exists zero evidence, to my knowledge or to anybody else's, and I've been covering it for years, that Acorn has ever, or anybody who has signed up to vote via Acorn, etc., has ever committed a single act of voter fraud. It doesn't happen. You'll hear it over and over again on Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and everywhere else that, you know, Acorn is committing voter fraud, and yet there is not a single example of any voter ever having voted, you know, signed up through Acorn or whatever, committing voter fraud.
And can I interrupt here?
Sure.
I think that our listeners might remember and know that there was an entire attorney general's scandal around this issue, trying to prove that voter fraud, trying to take overt action against voter fraud, and actually one of them being targeted for retaliation because he couldn't find enough evidence.
Well, that's right. The U.S. attorneys, this was at the heart of the U.S. attorney purge scandal.
Absolutely.
And some of their refusals to bring phony voter fraud cases where none existed. And that seems to be why some of these guys were pushed out of their jobs or targeted for firing because they wouldn't play along with this phony GOP voter fraud that was going on.
And I would say at the very least, there wasn't any evidence or they certainly would have been happy to comply, you can imagine.
Oh, yes, no doubt.
So,
no doubt.
On its face, for people who are still skeptical and want to remain, you know, quasi-neutral and hopefully this, on the face of it, if these hand-selected, litigators could not find enough with all of the pressure to do that and all the political pressure to do that.
Hand-selected Bush appointees.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So now we move through the voter issues of 2008 and 2009 continue on, and we come to the darling of the right, yes. The James O'Keefe, the self-appointed acorn exposer.
Yes. The quote-unquote citizen journalist, he's anything but the kind, of course. He is a Republican propagandist. He has been propped up by Republican propaganda outlets like Andrew Breitbart's BigGovernment.com. This is where these infamous acorn sting videotapes were captured. And, of course, everybody, I'm sure, has heard of them. Because even those outlets like the New York Times, who were not originally reporting on them, were badgered into reporting on them because, of course, they showed such extraordinary crimes that a national investigation was needed. And, of course, these guys like O'Keefe and Breitbart to this day are still calling on the Attorney General to, you know, bring forward a massive investigation. Well, the investigation, unfortunately, should likely be of James O'Keefe and Andy Breitbart for what they pulled off in these videotapes, and not so much in these videotapes, but really after these videotapes.
Yes, because
so much of it has proven now to be an utter scam. And this is sort of where my reporting has picked up over the last couple of weeks since James O'Keefe was arrested with three other co-conspirators down there in Louisiana, in New Orleans, trying to access the phone lines of a sitting U.S. senator for reasons that are still unknown. And by the way, one of those three co-conspirators of James O'Keefe is actually the son of the acting U.S. attorney down there in Louisiana, incredibly enough. So the four of these jerks have been arrested for a federal felony. And
not to hear the general news media, they've already started to say, well, felony, well, you know, conspiracy, well, continue on.
Yeah. They're just kids and they're pranksters. Uh-huh. And they're sorry. They're young and well. For a start, they're not young. James O'Keefe is 25 years old. He knows exactly what he's doing. The fact that they're downplaying it is remarkable if you consider the Sturm und Drang that would be, that would accompany. Imagine if these had been four Democratic Party operatives trying to get access, possibly tap the phones of a sitting Democratic U.S. senator. Imagine if these had been four men with Arabic-sounding names, four 25-year-old kids with Arabic-sounding names trying to access the phones of any U.S. senator, how these folks on the right would be flipping out, but such that it's four Republican Party operatives trying to access the phones of Democratic senator. Oh, they're just kids and they're merry pranksters. And that is according to one of those quote-unquote kids is James O'Keefe's attorney, who happens to be a superstar Republican attorney, ironically, from the Watergate era. Used to be Howard Baker, who was the ranking member of the Senate Watergate Investigative Committee, used to be his attorney. So this young kid can somehow afford, one of the top attorneys in the Republican Party, go figure. That said, as I'm looking at this story and as I'm looking at James O'Keefe's excuse for what happened, he put out a statement a couple of days after the arrest, and of course the folks on the right said, oh, phew, I'm glad that's it, everything's fine. He was just trying to find a few things out.
Yes.
It was all a big mix-up. And, you know, now if you look at his excuse, it doesn't hold water, not for a second. He claims that he was trying to, all he wanted to do was, quote, ask Mary Landrieu what was why their phones were broken. Well, they never said their phones were broken. They said that their phones were jammed for weeks last December when folks were trying to get through to give their opinions on the healthcare vote that was about to go on. And yet they decided that meant the phones were broken in December. So at the end of January, they're going to go into her office and do something. I don't know what they...
Well, and they also did, and did they not, speaking of the phones broken, they said the phones must be broken.
Or that's right.
They, you know, no one called them and said, our phones are broken.
Right. No, in fact, James O'Keefe, in his statement, actually quotes Mary Landrieu saying, quote, our phones were jammed for weeks. And then in the very next sentence, O'Keefe says, so we decided to go find out why her phones were broken.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it just,
so
it's,
then it's, comes that we're fixing a problem that didn't occur.
Right, that didn't occur, and we've got to go in with one guy with a secret video camera, two guys dressed up as phone company employees, misrepresenting themselves on federal property as phone company repairmen, accessing the main phone line at the receptionist's desks, then asking to get access to the phone closet while a fourth guy sits outside in a car with a listening device to the whole thing.
So,
but they were just going to ask why the phones were broken.
Right.
So, you know, the whole thing does not hold water for a start. So I'm looking at this, and you know, I'm hoping to explain this to readers at bradblog.com. And I'm understanding that folks who are just coming into this story, folks who are, you know, looking back at those Acorn Sting videos from last year, which was seen as a successful scam,
right,
don't even understand what really happened in those in those videos. And the biggest element that I think probably most of your listeners are aware of, you know, if I told them, oh, James O'Keefe, he's the one who dressed up as a pimp and went into these Acorn offices, you know, and got bad advice from Acorn employees. Well, the fact of the matter is,
and this is important, I want emphasis here because I it's incredible.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, and this was confirmed in an independent report from the former Massachusetts Attorney General, Scott Harshberger, in a report that was released on December 7th, O'Keefe was never dressed as a pimp in any of these offices. These videotapes were highly doctored. It was represented as if he was dressed as this ridiculous looking 70s era pimp.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, these Acorn people must be so stupid that they couldn't even recognize that this guy was not a pimp at all. How stupid are they? What a terrible organization. They must be defunded, and so on and so forth. But as Scott Harshberger writes, the former Massachusetts Attorney General, he says, quote, although Mr. O'Keefe appeared in all videos dressed as a pimp, in fact, when he appeared at each and every office, he was dressed like a college student in slacks and a button-down shirt. So all of those pimp shots,
which were run, which were absolutely 24/7, mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh, Hannity,
that's right,
every right-wing radio, including the mainstream quote-unquote media,
including the New York Times,
right,
the paper of record, and we'll get to that in a moment, but. So that entire thing was a scam, and I suspect most of your listeners are hearing this right now and going, what? He wasn't? I thought he was dressed as a pimp. No, those were exterior shots that he took that were inserted. Scott Harshberger, the former Massachusetts Attorney General, also found that the tapes themselves were heavily edited, overdubbed, such that you didn't even know what you couldn't know for sure what it was that the Acorn employees who were seen on the tape, what questions they were actually answering to. And in fact, when it comes to pimps, O'Keefe was actually and his partner Hannah Giles, who was dressed as a prostitute, their story to the Acorn employees was actually that they were trying to rescue this poor girl, Hannah Giles, from an abusive pimp, that they were trying to get her out of the pimp's house, that they were trying to rescue these young girls who were coming into the country. They were trying to rescue them from this dangerous, abusive pimp. And in fact, James O'Keefe in those offices had said he was a college student, had said he was planning to run for Congress. So, you know, underscoring the entire thing, these Acorn scam videotapes, for a start, were a scam, and yet the mainstream media bit, New York Times bit, and to their unbelievable shame, as I reported yesterday at bradblog.com, and I'll point folks over there for the entire email thread, frankly, between a reader of the Brad blog and myself and the senior editor for standards at the New York Times. And this extraordinary exchange we had, because after I had reported on the fact that, December 7th, Harshbarger came out and confirmed, in fact, that O'Keefe was never dressed as a pimp, well, a Brad Blog reader wrote to the New York Times and asked them, are they going to post a correction to their story? As it turns out, since the December 7th report, the New York Times has run at least 8 different stories suggesting that O'Keefe was, in fact, dressed as a pimp. They did so as recently as just a few days ago in a Sunday feature story that really made James O'Keefe and his buddies out to be, you know, some sort of folk heroes or something. Said that he was dressed as a pimp, and the fact is he wasn't. Well, you know, this...
All through this is, and I don't know the answer to this, and it hasn't been abundantly clear, as you say. Meanwhile, the making a folk hero of these four, I almost can see where they might think they can get away with the second one, because is there no standard when you propagate this story about the use of tape recorders, the use of editing, the use of going undercover? Probably the reason that they thought, if that was the case, that they could actually get away with this should they ever be discovered in the second attempt, is because in the first attempt, rather than anybody taking apart and looking at this from a journalistic standpoint, what actually happened, like you said, we see the Acorn people responding. We have no clue what they're responding to. We visually have no clue what they're responding to. See the back of her dress. We never see James O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm...
Well, yeah, and one of the things that the Harshbarger report found, and another report from the Congressional Research Service, both of these, you know, independent reports, Congressional Research Service found this and released this report on December 22nd. So it was just before Christmas, and may have gotten lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, which probably isn't an accident, yes.
Yeah, at least I'm told the New York Times reported on the Congressional Research Service study, where they didn't even report, they haven't even mentioned to this day, that Scott Harshbarger released a report, along with the Congressional Research Service, both of whom found no wrongdoing, no crimes committed by these Acorn employees that were seen on these videotapes. That doesn't make the news, that there was no crime here, at least by the Acorn employees. On the other hand, both of the reports also found that it seems likely that James O'Keefe himself committed crimes in at least 2 states by violating wiretapping laws in secretly videotaping these Acorn employees.
Now, Brad, so, I need to tell you that there are some very anxious readers that would listeners that would really like to get in here. Can we take a phone call?
Sure, I would love to. Of course, we got some of the most extraordinary stuff to come, but I would love to have some calls. Yeah.
Okay. And I want to let our listeners know that you can call at 503-231-8187 and, join this conversation. It's just been so fascinating. Okay. And I want our listeners to know that we are speaking with Brad Friedman of Brad Blog, where you can go and find all of this fascinating journalism that you don't get to see, and it's often misrepresented by, like you say, Brad, even the paper of note, the New York Times. And again, I felt this not in my stomach, in the memory of Judith Miller, and how this kind of goes on. And for all of us who don't have every day of every hour to spend following all of this, I really appreciate the effort that the bloggers and the journalists put into examining this and giving us this information. I, like I said, I consider myself a pretty astute, aware consumer of news, and I was just floored.
Yeah, and I think people, when they look at this full story, and as I say, we have yet to get to perhaps the most extraordinary part of it, concerning what the New York Times senior editor of Standards, Greg Brock, had to say when he was called on the carpet for their paper's misreporting. But I can hold that and tease that until after a call or two, if that's what you prefer, or I can jump right in.
Why don't you jump right in, and then we'll let them wait until we get a little more substance. Okay.
Okay. Well, when this Brad Blog reader had asked for a correction from the New York Times for the fact that they had misreported over and over and over again, even after these reports came out showing that he never wore that pimp costume inside the offices, Greg Brock, the senior editor of Standards, wrote back to this reader to say, and I'll just quote a sentence or two here.
Okay.
He wrote back to say, "Our article included the description of him dressed as a pimp because Mr. O'Keefe himself explained how he was dressed and appeared on a live Fox show wearing what he said was the same exact costume he wore to Acorn's offices. If there is a correction to be made, it would seem to start with Mr. O'Keefe himself, quote, we believe him, there is nothing for us to correct." So I'll unpack that for you. James O'Keefe showed up on Fox News after the release of these Acorn videos wearing that pimp outfit, sitting on the couch on Fox and Friends, where Steve Doocy introduced him as James Keefe, who is joining us now, wearing, quote, the exact same costume he wore into Acorn offices up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and a phony legend was born, and New York Times believes that's enough to report the fact that that's what happened. Never mind if you look at the actual videos, they show nothing of the sort. But no, you know, Fox News and James O'Keefe told them that he did this, so that's good enough for them. Well, it wasn't good enough for my astute Brad Blog reader, who wrote back, quoted the Harshbarger report, which said, you know, once again, at each and every office, he was dressed as a conservative college student in slacks and a shirt. At which point, Greg Brock, the senior editor, came back with some even more insane excuses, as if it wasn't enough that he, you know,
didn't do the homework,
the source,
didn't
News
check, yes, didn't do the homework, didn't check the sources, didn't do any of the vetting that would be necessary to say that.
Right. And yet, you know, this passed off as for reporting time after time after time in the paper of record. So when he was called on that, then Greg Brock moved forward and seems to have pulled something virtually out of thin air. He wrote back to my reader, he said, at one point, the camera was turned in such a way to catch part of the costume he was wearing, and Acorn employees who saw him described his costume. Therefore, we stand by our reporting. This is Greg Brock, senior editor of Standards at the New York Times. Well, the reader shared this email exchange with me. This was news to me that there was some sort of, you know, camera turned in such a way to catch part of the costume, or that Acorn employees described it. So I, you know, jumped in politely to ask Mr. Brock, well, you know, where is that video? Do you mind pointing me to that video where he's wearing that costume? And or could you point me to any of those interviews with Acorn employees describing the costume? Well, at that point, Brock went into the most convoluted, diluted. Well, first he said, you know, no comment. Once I jumped into it, identified myself as a journalist, and he tried to actually encourage me to not print any of these emails because he said they weren't intended for publication. They were private emails sent to a reader. Well, mind you, the reader was sending a letter to the editor at the New York Times. The editor, the senior editor, and his email address, if anybody has questions, it's a public email address.
Yes.
It's senioreditor@newyorktimes.com. So senioreditor@newyorktimes.com writes back to the reader, gives the explanation for why we stand by our reporting, that explanation being first that Fox News and James O'Keefe told them so, so, quote, we believe them. And then secondly, there is a videotape in these interviews with Acorn employees. Well, that's when I jumped in and I said, okay, well, where is that videotape in those interviews with Acorn employees? Because I haven't seen it. I've reviewed all the videotapes. Maybe I missed it. Maybe you could point me towards it. you know, after realizing he wasn't going to get me to not publish what it was that he said from his, you know, Times address, he starts going into some insane, convoluted song and dance that I still don't understand, and I've read these emails over and over again. This is one of the reasons why I shared the entire lengthy thread with readers, so they could get a sense of just the kind of nonsense, it seems to me, this guy was putting out. Well, in short, the reason he decided that he can't give me the link to this video, which he says we catch part of the costume he was wearing, was because apparently he or one of his reporters or more of his reporters either saw this video or didn't see this video, but this information came to them from a source which they cannot disclose. And therefore, no, he will not present either the video or the link to the video or anything else. It's all super secret and mysterious, and you'll just have to take the New York Times word for it.
Mind you,
they've never reported, to my knowledge, that, you know, the New York Times has been shown secret footage that shows X, Y, or Z. And as a matter of fact, Acorn themselves have been calling on James O'Keefe and Andy Breitbart, this jerk, to release their unedited videos, release the full videotape so people can get a sense of it. As to the charge about the Acorn employees who saw him, who described this costume, well, again, I asked Greg Brock, senior editor of the New York Times of Standards, if he could point me to those interviews, point me to any information that backed that up. And, of course, he came back. His this song and dance this time was, well, you know, I've read about this case ad nauseum, and I've seen, you know, so many interviews. I'm not saying that the New York Times did those interviews, but that they were printed elsewhere. Of course, he couldn't tell me where else they were printed. Of course, Acorn has told me they are unaware of any employees at this time having described O'Keefe's costume. And the entire thing, frankly, seems to be a scam. The Acorn tapes certainly are a scam. But the New York Times explanation of that scam and their refusal to correct it seems to be a scam from the paper of record. And all of this, I've argued, is very important. It's not just a, you know, a small miscorrection in a correction that needs to be made in a paper. This is important because if these guys were willing to go to these ends to lie about a scam that was seen as a successful scam. You know, the Acorn was a great coup, right? If they're willing to go to that length to lie about that scam, what will they now be willing to do and say and lie about when it comes to these very serious federal felony charges for trying to access the phones of a sitting U.S. senator down there in Louisiana?
Yeah.
They will say and do anything to get out of it, I would assure you. And, you know, evidence of it is there, what they had to do and how they misrepresented the sting hit videos on Acorn.
Well, again, and I, like you say, it is bad enough. And it is clearly understood by most of the people, I would say, you know, thinking, intelligent people, competent people, that this is Fox News. This is what they do, and this is how they do it. When it crosses over into the standards and ethics that we expect from journalists reporting from the New York Times, it sends me back to that clear moment when the only person who kept questioning the stand of the New York Times and all the information they supposedly had about the weapons of mass destruction and the reason we went to war and what was necessary, the Helen Thomas stood alone when people said the paper of record, and they said, and she said, or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not that it doesn't serve some purpose and have some value, but to believe it entirely without question,
right,
when Judith Miller and much of what was exposed, how this entire cyclical nature of these stories begins and ends, I think it, you know, again, you've done just such a fabulous job of exposing it. I want all our readers, listeners, again, I've read at your blog extensively on this, and it was just a fascinating peek into how this will occur if we are not vigilant and we do not respond. I was so appreciative, as I'm sure you were, that one of your readers took it further and now has exposed it even farther.
Well, you know, I've always argued when people read things on Brad Blog or any other blog, and they say, oh, what can we do? They throw up their hands. We're just up against it. You know, it's not only what the New York Times will do. It is what they have done. And the fact that one reader stood up, tried to make some noise, tried to take action. I tell people over and over again, yes, one person taking action like this does make a difference. And remember, this is the New York Times who, as we started out this hour mentioning, you know, 4 years ago said, oh, don't trust the bloggers, don't trust the Brad blogs out there, they're just conspiracy theorists. Unlike the New York Times, bloggers have, you know, do no fact-checking, they don't have to get their story right, they don't vet these things. Well, you know, this story right now at the top of bradblog.com puts the lie to that entire notion, and frankly, the New York Times owes the nation a retraction, a correction, an apology, and to be frank, a very serious look at who the hell
exactly
is currently their senior editor of standards and how long he should have that job at this point.
And at the very least, like you said, along with the retraction and the apology, a expose.
Yes.
Really doing the work that we expect if you're going to call yourself a journalist.
That's
well,
right.
I have to say that we're running out of time, and I want to make sure that our listeners can weigh in and can read the entire text. If you go to Brad Blog, again, this is a fascinating, fabulous article, and I just commend the work from you and any of the people at your blog, and for setting the record straight, enlightening all of us, and doing the like I said, the effort, the energy, the time and commitment to really do the hard work of investigative journalists.
Well, thank you, Michelle. And let me give your listeners something that they can do that will help to take action. There's a couple of very easy things they can do. For one, if you come by and read the story, there's little tags at the bottom for dig and Reddit and retweet. Please hit those because that helps to get out the word. It really does. It means that exponentially more eyeballs will see these stories, the more people who vote these stories up like this. But also, the New York Times public editor, Clark Hoyt, needs to look at this, needs to ring in on this. He's sort of the ombudsman for the paper. And his address is public@nytimes.com. I hope folks will send him this story, send him a link, send him a question about what they're reading in this story. That's public@nytimes.com. Send a polite letter asking that he look at this, because this is his job to actually look at the reporting of the paper and make sure that they're doing what they ought to be doing. public@nytimes.com. And if you have any questions about the story, you can read the entire email thread there. You can send them to Greg Brock himself. He, too, has a public email address that is senioreditor@nytimes.com.
Well, again, Brad, it's been a pleasure. I tell you, I will make a commitment that we'll have you on in the future and update us. This is really, really important and valuable, especially for those of us who are a little technophobe and not always aware of all the good work that the bloggers are doing. Again, thank you for being our guest. We will talk to you soon and get an update on what's going on.
Thank you, Michelle. Great to be here.
Thank you. This is Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher at KBOO 90.7 FM. And I want our listeners to know to stay tuned. Filmmaker Jihan El-Tahari talks about her documentary, Behind the Rainbow, which explores the transition of the African National Congress from a liberation organization to South Africa's ruling party. It's showing tomorrow at the Cascade African Film Festival. Thanks so much for listening.